Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Friday, March 14th, at just about 21 UTC, a lot later than I normally do this, and I'm doing it from my car in a parking lot. Look, things happened this week. So, you know, first of all, last week, on last week's show, Yvonne mentioned, hey, I'm going to be in Puerto Rico, but I'm going to try to do the show anyway. And we talked about how 20 years ago we did the show from his boat in the Virgin Islands or something, and that was pretty cool. A few hours before we were going to record the show, maybe 10 hours before we were going to record the show, Yvonne sends me a text, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it after all. I'm like, okay, no problem. So the first thing I did was, you know, I have this promo that sometimes airs during the show saying, hey, if you're interested in co-hosting the show, drop me a line. And so I emailed one of the folks who had sent me such a note, but who has not yet actually appeared on the show. Or maybe they did many, many years ago. I forget. But in any case, my plan was, you know, wait 24 hours or something, and if I hadn't heard from them, then hit up some of the other people who had answered that email, but who have been on the show more recently. The first person I asked, John, by the way, if you're listening, answer your email, you know, it never responded. And then before it was time for the podcast, my son had this accident and we ended up at the emergency room. And, I posted about this on my blog, on abelsmay.com. If any of you are interested, go back and look. So that sort of distracted me, and the whole, hey, let's ask other people, didn't end up happening until Thursday, where I remembered, oh, yeah, I have to do a show, and maybe I should ask somebody else. Nobody else was available, because at that point, I had to record it Thursday night, or at least so I thought. And then, guess what? I didn't end up doing it Thursday night, because I ended up watching Alex for most of Thursday night and I didn't get a chance and then it was late and, you know, things happen. So as it was, I had some stuff to do at work on Friday morning, but then Friday afternoon, we have to take Alex in for his the checkup on his finger that, you know, the accident I mentioned earlier. And so I left work early. And so here I am sitting in a parking lot with my laptop and a microphone held in front of me as I record the show. So we will have stuff to talk about. And of course, the laptop, since it's not plugged in, keeps going to sleep, which is really annoying. 'Cause then I have to type my password in again and... which I can't do holding the mic. Hold on. Yeah, I know this is scintillating to everybody. Anyway, we're going to have a real show. A solo show, of course, as I pick the mic back up again. And so once again, I give my warning. For those of you who don't like solo shows, skip the rest of this. I promise this time, you know, it may be the usual hour in length. But it's not going to be super, super long. I'm not going to go on for 2 hours because 2 hours from now I have to be in the doctor's office with my son. So it won't be that long. Anyway, we have actual topics. And I may only touch on some of these. There's the missing plane. There's the CIA versus Senate battle. There's stuff going on in the Ukraine. I've been doing some more along the lines of cord cutting, reducing my dependence on cable for my entertainment. There was that whole maybe possibly identification of the inventor of Bitcoin, but maybe probably not. Who knows? And we may or may not get to all of those. We'll see. But of course, I must start with the absolutely traditional thing that we do twice a year, and I just have to complain about daylight savings time. Once more, we just did the spring forward thing. Spring forward is worse than fall back. Yes, you get to leave work a little. Here's the whole. Again, bottom line is time doesn't change. What changes is what everybody does. So it's not that suddenly it's, you know, more light at 5 o'clock when you leave work than it was before. No, you're leaving work an hour earlier. That's what's happening. You're leaving work an hour earlier, and it's just everybody agrees to do it. It's ridiculous. It's stupid. There have been studies that show it, you know, causes an increase in the accident rate on the days right after the time changes. It costs money. Computer systems have to be more complicated to deal with it. Blah, blah. It just needs to go away. It just plain needs to go away. While you're at it, I mean, yeah, I would love to just get rid of time zones entirely and have everybody use UTC, but I know that's not going to happen. But at least it's reasonable. It's a reasonable thing to get rid of savings time. You know, we have a divided Congress right now. Can't agree on very much at all. But I bet you they could agree on something like this. It's almost like naming a post office. Just get rid of the time change. And, you know, pick the earlier one, pick the later one, split the difference. I don't care, you know, but stop changing it twice a year. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Okay. Having gotten that out of the way, time to move on to some other things. There's the missing plane that left Malaysia and disappeared. And no one knows where it was. At first, everyone assumed catastrophic failure, crash, blah, blah, blah. Most recent reports have, well, but there are a variety of indications that it may have continued to fly for 4 or 5 hours after the last signal was received. And there are indications that the communication systems shut off in sequence, not all at once, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line here, this is incredibly fascinating to follow. Incredibly tragic to the people who are on the plane, who, you know, first of all, it's bad enough if your family is involved, family or friends are involved in a plane crash and all die. But this has to be, I don't mean to underplay at all how bad that is. It's horrible, but this has to be worse because it's, you know, they've disappeared. We can't find them. It had to have been a crash. We're just looking for a wreckage. No hope of survivors. Oh, wait. The plane kept flying. We don't know where it was. Maybe it crashed. Maybe it landed somewhere. Who knows? And this is the kind of thing that it's just the uncertainty involved where you're giving potential hope to these people. Is just, and who knows, maybe there is some chance that these people, the plane landed somewhere, they're being held hostage, blah, 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 but it seems unlikely. Even in the event that it was indeed a hijacking and something nefarious and blah, 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 and they landed the plane successfully somewhere, there's a good chance they killed all the people anyway. If that even happened. Or it could have been hijacked, and then you have had a Shanksville type event, except in the middle of the ocean, where the passengers fought back and then the plane went down. Or any number of a bunch of other things. Yeah, the reports of it continuing to fly may be mistaken. Maybe it actually did crash right where they thought it was, and they just haven't found it yet. Who knows? And look, I'm not going to speculate any further at this point on what might be going on, other than there are dozens and dozens of possibilities, and this must be absolutely hell on the families. And I just feel so awful for them. Because every speculation that anybody has done so far, there have been twists and turns, and then it's like, oh, well, it doesn't look like that. And, you know, and we'll have to expand the search area because, it looks like they turned first. And were they trying to return to the airport? Or, oh no, they're trying to head off in a completely different direction entirely because the plane's been stolen. Or who the hell knows? Just ridiculous. So I'm not going to speculate any further. Maybe by next week we'll know more. Maybe this will be one of the cases where we don't know for years or ever. I was reading, obviously it didn't have passengers on board it, but I tweeted a link to a Wikipedia article. There was a 727, I think it was, that was stolen from an airport in Angola, empty, not full of passengers. The plane had been decommissioned and it had just been sitting on the runway for 14 months. And apparently a couple of people decided to steal it, got in, flew away before anybody could catch them. To this day, and it's been, you know, many, many years now, nobody's seen that plane again. Or at least nobody that would cop to it. So, you know, yes. And yes, the remarkable thing that everybody has been noting, of course, is yes, it is indeed possible in this day and age for you to lose an airplane and for it to completely disappear and not to have anybody know where it is. And there are, of course, lots of calls to add more live streaming capability for the data. That would cost quite a lot of money, apparently, but is perfectly doable technically. I don't know if that's really necessary or not. It certainly seems like it would be useful in a number of situations. Whether it's worth the cost, I don't know. The airline industry is one that is always sort of on the edge. But I could certainly see why it would give more peace of mind. On the flip side, this is the first time anything has happened even remotely like this in decades. We had the flight that got lost over the Atlantic, but they found the wreckage pretty quickly. They knew roughly where it was. This particular scenario, this just doesn't happen. So you don't necessarily want to build systems specifically to address the situation that almost never happens. Although, you know, that's how safety systems work. They continually ramp up adding systems to address increasingly rare scenarios so that eventually you are addressing scenarios that happen one in millions or one in billions of times, and you're protected against it. And safety ratchets up because of that. You don't build safety systems to deal with the routine because the routine works smoothly and nothing bad happens. Anyway, let's take another break. Let's take the first break and we'll be back talking about some more things in a minute.
Celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we're back. So, one thing before I continue, you know, I mentioned I'm recording this in my car, but isn't this so much better? I'm recording this, I am in my car, but the car is not moving. I do have the air conditioner on, the engine's on and the air conditioner's on because it was freaking hot in here without it. But I'm not driving down the highway, recording this on my iPhone with the iPhone on the mount. I've brought my laptop, I've got my real microphone, which I'm holding directly in front of me. I tried like sort of putting it down a few feet away and it sounded sort of tinny. So I'm holding it in front of me. So isn't that a little bit better than when I'm driving down the highway? It's harder for me, frankly. But, you know, I do this for you. I do this for you. I thought about going to a park and setting up on a park bench or something, but I decided I didn't have time to go back and forth, and then it'd be the wind, and I wasn't equipped to deal with wind noise and all that kind of stuff. I thought about doing it inside. I'm parked outside a mall, Factoria Mall in Bellevue, actually, at the moment. But then I was like, there's no way I'm going to do this on a seat in the middle of the mall, you know, because imagine what I'm saying right now. Imagine what I said in the last segment. Imagine me saying that loudly while sitting on a chair alone by myself in the middle of a mall with people walking by me. Yeah, no, that wasn't going to happen. No, you know, they probably would have escorted me out. But of course, just then the screen went to sleep and I had to wake it up and... I should go boing, boing, boing or something because there was an interruption. But it's too late now, so there's just a little gap. Anyway, on to something real. Let me talk briefly about this spat between the Senate and the CIA. So, apparently... And I know this is going to be a shock to absolutely everybody listening to this show. But apparently, the CIA has been stonewalling an investigation into malfeasance by the CIA. I don't know why this could possibly have happened. But, and what's interesting here is, of course, Senator Feinstein of the Senate Intelligence Committee has been... one of these, the word I want to use is rabid, rabid defenders of the intelligence community. All of this NSA stuff that we've been talking about on this show ever since Edward Snowden's revelations, all that's just fine. Snowden is a traitor. All of this wiretapping, data collection, etc. We all need that. It's for the greater good. It's for national security, and nobody should be upset. There's no real privacy violation going on here, etc., etc., etc. But now it appears that the CIA was watching what her staffers were doing when they were doing their investigation into, specifically into the torture that went on during the Bush administration. And now she's very, very upset. And apparently she still tried to deal with it quietly with the CIA, for an extended length of time, but apparently has had enough of it and went public with it. And a lot of people are saying this is a constitutional crisis because basically the CIA is accusing the Senate of stealing documents, and the Senate is accusing the CIA of spying on senators whose job it is to investigate them, which obviously is a potentially a little bit of a conflict of interest there. The CIA is denying it is doing these things. Meanwhile, there's this insanely long report on the investigation out of torture that was finished 14 months ago and has been waiting on CIA comment and declassification before possibly declassifying some of this report. That comment was supposed to be done within 3 months. They actually did return some comments earlier this year. But part of the controversy here is that the documents that the Senate staffers had that they weren't supposed to have were related to an internal set of CIA documents that basically contradict the CIA's official response, because they're much more critical and much more damning in terms of the events that happened. I don't know if this report will ever see the light of day. The fact that this has blown up, I think, actually increases those chances, because there's more pressure to put it out there. The Senate, by the way, it has the power to declassify this on their own. It's only a nicety to defer to the CIA and the executive branch on this. And there are a variety of logistics here. I mean, and it's unclear whether the Senate in it, boo, boo, boop. I remember the boo, boo, boop sound this time. See, because once again, the screen went to sleep and I hit enter on the keyboard to wake it up, and enter went right through and hit the stop button on the recording. I suck. Anyway, it's unclear whether the Senate, whether there'd be the political willpower in the Senate and whether there'd be enough bipartisan support to do anything from that point of view. However, here's the thing. Any senator is protected from legal prosecution for anything done in the furtherance of their duties as senator, and specifically, even strongly, more so, from anything done on the floor of the Senate. This is a tactic that was used during the Pentagon Papers release in the 60s. A senator, it was, what's his name? That flake from Alaska who actually ran for president a couple times ago. Anyway, he actually stood on the Senate floor and started reading classified documents. And no one can stop you. And he did it until he couldn't do it anymore. Any single senator could do that today, right now. There'd be no chance of prosecution from them. They are protected from that on their basis. And people have argued that Senator Wyden and some of these other senators who are convinced that there's been significant overreach should just do that. Should just go to the Senate floor and start talking about the things they know that they think should be public. But so far, we haven't done that. So far, there hasn't the report hasn't been released that way. But, you know, look, there's a number of interesting meaty parts to what's going on here. First of all, of course, is the fact that this torture happened during the Bush administration. It was for the most part, stopped during Bush's second term. So before Obama even got in, there are some practices continuing to this day, including force feeding of people who are hunger striking in Guantanamo that arguably is still inappropriate. But most of this behavior stopped during the second Bush administration. However, there's an incredibly strong case to be made that the activities that were done constitute war crimes under numerous international treaties that the U.S. is a part of. That theoretically, the administration has a duty to follow up on. The individuals involved in carrying out these acts should be subject to prosecution. The people who authorized these acts should be subject to prosecution. And yes, that goes up the chain all the way to Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. According to a variety of international standards and U.S. law, very arguably, not even including the fact that treaties signed by the U.S. are part of the supreme law of the land, these folks should be prosecuted. President Obama made a decision very early on in his administration to, according to his words, look forward and not back. The end result of this is essentially sweeping all this under the rug. The Bush administration was guilty of horrible war crimes. And you could argue well beyond the torture stuff, but this is one of the clearest cases. The president decided, I'm not going to spend a lot of time looking at that. We're not going to worry about it. We're going to go forward. Because if he had decided to do that in his first term, say goodbye to any other agenda he may have had. Because this would be widely seen as a political vendetta against his predecessor, and there would be if you think Republican obstructionism was something right now, just imagine what it would be if Obama had announced in his first few months at office that he was announcing prosecutors whose job was to go after senior Bush administration officials and perhaps even George W. Bush and Dick Cheney themselves. Say goodbye to that agenda. So Obama made the strategic decision to not follow up on any of that. And he appointed you know, folks in the CIA, I mean, the current CIA director is a holdover from the Bush administration, not as CIA director, but he had other roles and he was involved in this stuff. Supported it vocally. Now that we're in Obama's second term, you could argue that he's not got much to lose. He could go after these folks at this point. But of course, it's not that simple. First of all, he does have something to lose and think about, because even though he's not running for re-election, he cares that Democrats will win next time around. And this could hurt their chances if he went after this aggressively. Potentially, maybe, who knows? Or maybe some of the facts revealed would hurt Republicans more. But it's a big wild card. But I think probably even more relevant, and shown by Obama's actions related to the surveillance issues, Obama's been co-opted by the surveillance state and by the national security state. And maybe he would have agreed with all this to begin with anyway, and this isn't really a change. But it seems clear at this point that Obama is 100% about defending the status quo and defending executive power to do whatever the hell they want. And maybe he disagreed with torture at a specific tactic, but he's doing absolutely nothing that would reinforce to his successors that this is off limits. The Bushies did this, and they left office, and nothing happened. If this is truly behavior that Obama believes is reprehensible and off limits to the President of the United States and to the executive branch, the way to make sure that is actually the case is not to decide to sweep it under the rug. But that's exactly what's happened. And the Senate, when they brought all this up about what the CIA had been doing and the CIA's stonewalling and this latest attack on the Senate by the CIA through the potential charges against Senate staffers for accessing this document that theoretically they weren't supposed to have, even though it was absolutely relevant to their investigation. All this stuff, you know, Senator Feinstein said, Obama, take control of this. Make these decisions. The CIA is not being cooperative. You make the executive decision to release this report. But so far, and this may change, but so far, Obama's response to that has basically been to say, CIA is already looking at this. Justice Department's already looking at this. There's nothing for me to do here. These are not the actions of someone who truly respects the separation of power here. And of course, you don't expect it from the executive. That I've said this time and time again, you know, even before Obama took office, after his election, even before his election, I'm like, look, you can be the biggest defender in the universe of limited executive power and the proper role of Congress and this and that and this and that. But once you actually become president, you're no longer talking about any theoretical presidency. You're talking about you. And of course, you know, maybe some people can't be trusted with this, but I can be trusted with this power. Of course, I will do the right thing because I'm a wonderful and honest person and I trust myself. Well, duh. So will the next guy and the next guy after that, and they will not all agree on what the correct boundaries of behavior are. If those lines aren't set in stone by not only the law, because we've seen a lot of the shenanigans that have gone on here, both with the torture and rendition program and with warrantless wiretapping and later with the other surveillance things that have been revealed, the argument is made that, of course, this is perfectly legal. We just happen to interpret the word relevant to mean anything in the universe. Or whatever. So it has to be not just the laws themselves, but the precedent that surrounds those laws and what happens. So yes, that means if someone goes too far, there has to be repercussions to the fact that they went too far. And yes, you have to uphold the principles, you know, from Nuremberg, that, you know, saying, well, those were my orders, is not a defense. Saying, well, the White House legal counsel determined that this was legal, also, by the way, not a defense. You know, you can't defend yourself against a burglary charge by saying, hey, before I went into the store, I asked my lawyer and my lawyer said it was okay. No, sorry. Doesn't work. And that's exactly the same thing that happens when you get the White House legal counsel or the CIA legal counsel or whoever issuing an opinion on the legality of something that the CIA or the NSA or whoever wants to do. That's exactly the thing. You have to take it to the real courts to redetermine. And yes, that means some of this stuff can't be secret. And the fact that the CIA is acting in this way and resisting and stonewalling the investigation, and who knows, this may even be at the orders of Obama for all I know. But the fact that this is going on shows that this is out of control. There were a number of articles written, and I'm sorry, my computer screen went to sleep again, so I can't tell you exactly what. But there were a number of articles that made the point that, look, there is an argument to be made that government does have to do some secret things sometimes. But in a democracy, the way we make up for that is by making sure that there is robust oversight by democratically elected officials. So in theory, you could be like, yes, the CIA, the NSA, all of these agencies are doing secret things, but rest assured, your democratically elected representatives in Congress know all about everything that they're doing and agree that it's okay and necessary. But what's happening here is that things are being hidden from the oversight committee. And the oversight, by the way, has been notoriously bad anyway. There's evidence that senators aren't particularly interested in digging in and finding out things. The House, too. And they're not interested in criticizing and stopping things. They're not actually interested in being the policeman that holds the reins that keeps these guys from going too far. They really aren't interested in that, and they haven't been aggressive about it. But even the weak oversight that we've had is being stonewalled, and they're not getting an information shared. Radical changes really need to happen here. You know, huge segments of what is going on behind the veil, as it were, need to just stop. Just stop outright. Because it's clear that the oversight is not working. It's clear that they're doing things that go above and beyond what vast portions of the population deem are appropriate. Okay, I'll admit, maybe a majority at this point think it's all okay. But a significant, very significant minority think this is crazy and well beyond what should be being done. And we don't have proper mechanisms that are actually in place for the theoretical oversight of the legislative and judicial branches to operate. So something has to be done. Of course, probably nothing will be. And, you know, you've got a couple choices at this point. Either the Senate has to get super aggressive about going after this and exercising their own prerogatives to start releasing information and making it absolutely public what happened, and then maybe there's some public outrage that causes things to happen. Or Obama suddenly decides that he's going to change course here. But it's certainly not looking that way. I mean, with the revelations of the last couple weeks, yeah, nobody's been fired. I mean, not even the last couple of weeks. I mean, we had the director of the NSA flagrantly lie to Congress, as shown by the Snowden documents. You have this stuff that's being alleged by Senator Feingold, who's, again, a friend of the intelligence community. And neither the heads of the NSA or the head of the CIA are fired. They're still, everything's fine. That's not looking good. Maybe in the next election cycle, there'll be people who are willing to be more aggressive elected. But, you know, it's just as likely that, you know, maybe the Republicans take control of the Senate in this November. And, you know, like, these reports never see the light of day. And there's no further investigation happens. Who knows? It's all very depressing. Anyway, it's time for another break. We'll be back after this.
Hey, you, listeners. We know you have thoughts about the stuff we say here on Curmudgeon's Corner. You probably think we're completely wrong about many things. Or perhaps you want to tell us that we're geniuses. That's always great. Or perhaps you just want to suggest a topic for us to talk about. All of these things are wonderful. We love to hear from you. So talk to us. If you prefer email, just email Sam. That's me, your prime curmudgeon. At abulsme@abulsme.com. That's spelled A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Or tweet at us. I'm at abulsme. And Yvonne is at imbo. That's I-M-B-O-U. And while we may not do it every time, don't be surprised if we respond to you right here on the show during an upcoming episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll be looking for your email and tweets. So get right on that.
Okay, here I am again. So we got a couple things left to go. I mentioned my son's finger, but I'm not going to talk more about that here. Look at my blog post if you care. There's the Ukraine. Let's talk about Ukraine for a little bit. The only thing really to say here is to reiterate what I said last week and maybe the week before. I don't know. The number one thing on everybody's mind here at this point should be, how do we avoid this turning into a shooting war with people dying? How do we avoid the bloodshed? And I know this isn't a popular view, but in the end, you know, I know there's all kinds of stuff about, you know, we got to be tough. We got to stand up to them. We can't just let them take the Ukraine. We can't just let them take Crimea or Eastern Ukraine or whatever. There's the, you know, the whole precedent of the inviolability of European boundaries, blah, 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 blah. I understand all that. But frankly, if the best way to avoid bloodshed is to just let Russia have parts of these things, then just let Russia have it. Now, I understand it's more complicated because, you know, we mentioned that, you know, hey, a majority of the people in Crimea and possibly Eastern Ukraine would probably be just fine going to Russia, would probably even prefer it. But it's not like this is a 99.9999% majority. I've seen estimates more like 60-40. So there's a significant minority that doesn't want to go. And that's what makes these things complicated, amongst other things. So I understand there's a bit of complexity there. But, you know, I don't want to see, you know, thousands of people dying over some principle of, you know, how this stuff should work. Yeah, I put too high a value on human life here. You know, I don't know. I can certainly, you know, to me, there's a different dynamic here. If you were going into a place that very, very clearly didn't want this. That's not so clear in Crimea. It's not so clear in eastern Ukraine. Now, do you need protections of the minorities and making sure blah, blah, blah? Absolutely. You don't want... And maybe there's no good answer here. But look, put aside all of my personal thoughts on, well, maybe it's not all that bad. Just let it go. And maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe it would be that bad for the people who are suddenly going to live under Russia instead of under the Ukraine. I don't know. Put aside all that. You get back to the, what the hell are you going to do about it? This is Russia's backyard. Russia has forces there. The West certainly, at least I certainly hope so, the West is not going to entertain getting into a direct conflict with Russia over any of this. Because the one thing you absolutely positively do not want under any circumstances is, a direct U.S.-Russia conflict. No. Just let's not go there. What are we? Okay. Economic sanctions. Okay. Now, we talked last week about how it's clear that Europe didn't really have the gumption to put general sanctions on. And that's probably true, and it's unclear, what the end result of that is. You know, are you trying to weaken Yeltsin? Oh my God, flashback there. Putin. Weaken Putin's hold on power so that, he eventually falls and is replaced by someone more Western? I think you'd be waiting a while. Who knows? Maybe some of those tactics could work long term, but you'd be waiting a while. Or what's your goal there? And of course, we talked about how it's going to hurt the West, too, to do that level of sanctions. So there's been talk about, okay, well, let's identify the top 100 or 200 Russian oligarchs who are decision makers or power brokers or whatever, and go after them individually. Okay. That might piss a few of them off. I just don't see, all of this is, symbolic, okay, fine, that's great, that's wonderful, it's not really going to change anything on the ground. So what purpose does all this posturing really serve, other than to potentially escalate the situation further? I just don't see it. And you have to do some of this. You have to do some posturing. You have to let people know that you're upset. But, I said last week, all of the, John McCain's of the world and the neocons of the world are, of course, foaming at the mouth that Obama isn't being aggressive enough against Russia. I think, if anything, they're being too aggressive. Because what are you really going to gain out of this? Where are you going to go? How is anything the U.S. or Western Europe does here going to have any result other than making the situation worse? I mean, aside from, okay, fine, you can give some loans to the Ukrainians. And I see that failed in our Senate, by the way. But maybe the Europeans give them some loans, give them some assurances, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but of what? In the end, Russia's going to do what Russia wants to do. Because Russia knows that there is no scenario here where the West is really, truly going to do anything that directly matters to Russia. We're not going to send in tanks. Although I saw an unconfirmed report today that a U.S. drone was captured in Crimea. But it was taken down rapidly. So maybe not true at all. But what are we really going to do? And I think you hurt your reputation worse by going out and making threats that you can't actually back up than you do by just doing nothing to begin with. Make a few statements about that, how this is awful and we wish it hadn't happened, and then get on with life and deal with the reality on the ground. I think ends up being the better option. You know, because you make all these arguments about, you know, if you don't do anything at all, Russia's going to be emboldened. So you have to be tough. Well, yeah, but if all you're being tough is making stern statements and talking and doing some saber rattling, but not actually coming through with any of it, that's not going to act as any effective deterrence the next time around either. You know, Russia's going to do what Russia's going to do. Now, you know, you've got Poland and the Baltic states really worried that, well, if they can just do this, what's to stop them from doing stuff against our countries? And I can understand if I was one of those countries how I would potentially be concerned. But, you know, there's a unique series of events here. I don't think Putin's grand plan is to, you know, invade all of Eastern Europe and make it into Soviet vassal states again. And I use the word Soviet, not Russian there, because a lot of the folks say that, you know, this is Putin's big motivation. He's been quoted that saying the fall of the Soviet Union was one of the great tragedies of our time, and he just wants to bring it back. I'm not so sure. Maybe. But, you know, there's a lot of risk at this for Putin, too. And, you know, I don't see the need yet. And I use the word yet, because who knows how it develops. If Putin does take over the Crimea and then the eastern Ukraine and then decides to take over the rest of Ukraine again to bring it back into the fold as well, and then decides, hey, I think Estonia would be a great snack. Okay, then the picture's different. Then the picture changes. Now, even then, I'd say there's probably a strong argument that we still don't want to engage in a conflict there. But it becomes a different situation with a different debate. Right now, we're talking about Crimea, and yes, there's going to be a sham election to decide whether Crimea wants to join Russia. That the place is occupied right now. It's not going to be a free and fair election. I've heard lots of reports of the people who don't want to go boycotting the election, which of course makes it even less likely to have a free and fair result. But, you know, everything I've heard anyway says, yeah, this would probably win in a free and fair election, even if you did have one. So, anyway, we'll see. Everyone's still making noises that, if carried through, will result in escalation. You know, the Russians are talking about their referendum, and that if Crimea wants to be part of Russia, it can be. The West is talking about how this is an invalid election and how this is an illegal occupation and Russia needs to leave and demanding this and that. Everybody's using language that still sounds like what's going to happen next is some form of escalation. Or, you know, Russia does what Russia does and at some point calls the West's bluff. And the West is like, oh yeah, you're right, we can't do anything about it. It's bad. But to me, that makes the West look even weaker than if they'd said nothing at all. Or had just said, we think this is bad, but without making threats. We'll see how Crimea goes and whether we actually see any escalation. As Yvonne said the other day, it's a miracle that this hasn't escalated into a full on-out shooting war so far. And it still could at any moment. And I just hope that whatever happens, cooler heads prevail. And one way or another, this doesn't turn into a bloodbath. Because to me, that's the nightmare scenario here. The nightmare scenario is not Russia taking over Crimea, Russia taking over eastern Ukraine, even Russia taking back control of all of Ukraine. That's not the nightmare scenario. The nightmare scenario here is that 6 months from now, Ukraine looks like Syria did last year, and still does, to a very strong degree. It's just not in the news as much. You know, that's the nightmare scenario. The nightmare scenario is a bloody, protracted civil war with many people dying. That's what you want to avoid here. Not to mention an escalation that brings in Western powers here. I've been listening to the latest Don Carlin hardcore history on World War I, and the latest episode is all, you know, battles and stuff, and I don't care that much about that. But the first episode involved, you know, the how nobody wanted World War I to happen. Nobody thought World War I would happen, but a series of things escalated, and all of a sudden everybody was at war. That's the nightmare scenario. That's what you don't want to see happen. You don't want to see a civil war in Ukraine, and you absolutely, positively, 100% do not want to see any sort of open conflict breaking out between the East and West. That's the nightmare scenario. Absolutely everything at this point should be about de-escalation. How do we avoid bloodshed? Okay, if you want to slap a few sanctions on that, everybody recognizes Putin's like, okay, fine, sanctions. I can deal with sanctions. I've got Crimea. Okay, fine, whatever. If that makes you feel better, I guess, go for it. As long as that doesn't lead to further escalation. That's what everyone needs to stop. No violence, please. Please. Okay, we're going to take another break. We'll be back with a few little things after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganairRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby. Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this. Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganairRadio.com, The Valley.
And after quite a bit of a delay, I'm back. I'm back in my car, but a bunch of things happened in between. So after that break, so I recorded a whole other segment on cord cutting and stuff like that. Well, it was a short segment, because like, I only had 7% left on my battery on my laptop, and I realized I had to be quick. So I have like one of these plug things that I can plug in the car. And so I tried to use that, but it wasn't working. So I'm like, oh crap, I really only have 7%. So I rushed through talking about what I wanted to talk about cord cutting, which wasn't all that substantial anyway, but I still rushed through it. And then And then I'm like, I've got 3% left, so I'm saying goodbye, bye. And then I stopped recording, and I went to save it, and it's going saving, 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 and it's going estimated time to finish saving, 30 seconds, 40 seconds, 50 seconds. It was going up, and meanwhile, the battery went 3, 2, 1, 0, and then the computer shut down while it was still in the process of saving. And I'm like, oh no. And I had saved it a little bit previously, like maybe right before the break, actually. But I wasn't sure if, because it was interrupted while it was saving, maybe it got corrupted and overwritten and blah, blah, blah. And so I was afraid I'd lost everything. But anyway, I couldn't plug into the thing. So I'm like, okay, I mentioned I was meeting Brandy at the doctor for Alex to get his finger checked out. So I just went over to the doctor and I plugged in the waiting room. And The computer started back up again, and luckily I discovered I had not lost everything. I'd only lost that last segment, which, you know, I know you guys are heartbroken, but I'll say something about cord cutting again shortly. But anyway, my wife and Alex met us. We had our appointment. His finger looks fine. Well, as fine as you can possibly get with two stitches still in it with the nail attached. But it's healing the way it's supposed to.
And there was string in it.
Yeah, there's still string in it. Oh, hold on.
No, you tell it. You tell it, Daddy.
Hold on. I unplugged this. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Testing 1, 2, 3. There we go. Hey, we're back. So I accidentally unplugged the microphone cord because I was trying to put the microphone to Alex so that he could explain what happened, but I unplugged the cord. But it kept recording from the internal mic. But anyway, I unplugged it. You guys don't care. Anyway, bottom line, his finger was fine, and now I'm back out in the car with Alex. And his mom left again. We'll catch up shortly. I put Alex in the car because he was asleep. He slept through his whole doctor's appointment, and I figured I'll put him in the car and I'll finish up my podcast, but then he woke up. So that just means he can talk a little bit. But anyway, cord cutting. All I was saying is that over the last few months, I've mentioned this on a show before. I promised that. I promise.
19.
Alex, do I need to record this outside the car?
Yay.
Yeah. Anyway, I've been finding more and more that most of what I watch and listen to is no longer via cable. It's through Apple TV. It's through Netflix. It's or not just Apple TV, but things purchased from Apple, Netflix. What are the others? Amazon. Yeah, Amazon free Prime streaming, which isn't free because I pay for Prime, but there are other things that come with Prime. Anyway. And I've mentioned that on the show before, but I took the additional step just starting in the last few weeks. I'm actually migrating. I'm slowly starting to delete my season passes and wish lists from my TiVo in favor of just universally going the other. Because what I've found is I've started to be like, even if it's a show I've got on my TiVo that I've recorded off my cable, I don't want the commercials. I just don't want it. So in a couple of occasions, I've bought it anyway. And I was kind of using the TiVo only as a bookkeeping thing of what should I watch next. So I set up a little wiki page on my personal wiki that keeps track of the shows I've got and what's the last episode I've watched and that kind of stuff. And so I've been using that. And I'm not doing it all at once, but I am moving stuff. I'm moving to outside of the car. Boo, boo, boo. This is Sam here from the future. I'm back at home and finally putting things together. And you just heard me start to get out of the car because Alex was yammering, and I just wanted to finish. And so I stood up next to the car holding the microphone and talked. And yeah, it was a mistake. The rest of what I recorded has a lot of background noise. Wind, cars, traffic, birds. I don't even know what all was there, but it's just a big background humming that's kind of distracting. I tried to do a little bit of post-processing to make it a little bit better, but it still sucks. I apologize. You got about 10 minutes left or something. So you'll make it through. You'll make it through, but I apologize for the reduced sound quality Yeah, I got to learn this lesson about not recording in noisy environments. It didn't seem all that noisy. I wasn't like right next to the highway, but in the audio, you can really tell. Anyway, sorry, and I know you probably don't care that much, but I just wanted to explain why you're suddenly going to have a lot more noise for the rest. Sorry. Here you go. Boo, boo, boop. Anyway, I am slowly moving stuff off and deciding, you know, I don't really need the TiVo. The few things I intend to leave on there, at least for the short term, are related to, you know, news of, yeah, various forms of news, local, national, international, and a few other things like that, and stuff for Alex. But I'm moving my stuff off, my show watching, my serial, like, you know, there's an episode every week or whatever kind of stuff. I'm moving all that away. And I think, yeah, it's so far it's working smoothly and I don't miss anything because, you know, as when Yvonne and I have talked about this before, the primary things left that aren't easily available online through other sources are two things: live news and live sports. I'm not a sports guy. I couldn't care one little bit about sports, so that's not a factor for me. And news, every single time there's a new big news event, it's just proving more and more to be the case that there's no need for the TV either. The online sources are better. You know, for breaking stuff, you've got Twitter rounds up all the sources really quickly. You can find all kinds of online information. And obviously with breaking news events, there's all kinds of questions about the quality of what you're seeing. But it's no worse than the blather that happens on CNN or Fox or whatever. I admit I'm still tempted when there's a big news event to just turn on CNN because they're likely to have it. But there are other, you know, it's not anywhere near as critical as it used to be, even in those breaking news events. And arguably, you know, the other sources are all better at this point. There's a certain type of live event where the live video of the event as it's going on is the critical bit that sometimes the online cable networks still have a monopoly on that live feed, and it's hard to find it elsewhere. But that's diminishing over time. And I keep thinking, you know, come election night 2016, will I still want to be watching CNN or having some other source like that on in the background while I do whatever I'm doing? Probably. But there's so much else. I don't really need it. I mean, even the fact that, you know, network X, Y, or Z has called the race for whatever, the second that happens, it's all over Twitter. You don't need to actually be watching the network for it. Anyway, so I'm moving. The one thing that's still somewhat annoying about those kinds of things is there are a few shows where the online source right now that I have is something like Xfinity or HBO Go or something like that that requires you to prove that you have a cable connection. But more and more, I'm getting to the point where, you know, if you're going to be stingy about your show and not have it available on the major common sources, you know, if I can't buy it at Apple, I can't stream it at Netflix, I can't stream it at Amazon, and maybe also I can't buy it at Amazon, because they, of course, sell them too. But usually my mode right now is I'll buy things from Apple, I'll stream things from Amazon, if Apple doesn't have, well, here's my actual order. I check Netflix first. If Netflix has it, I'll look at it. Then the next thing in line is I'll check Comcast. No, I'm getting confused because I'm outside and the car's passing by. It's so confusing. Anyway, Netflix first. If Netflix has it, I'll watch it there. If Netflix doesn't have it, I'll check Amazon Free Prime Streaming. If they have it, I'll watch it there. If they don't have it, then my next step is Comcast's Xfinity application, which rounds up basically a whole bunch of channels that are on Comcast that provide their stuff online. So for instance, the new Cosmos, which I complained about a couple times not being available online, or at least nobody was saying where it was going to be online or when prior to it launching on television. At the moment, it's there. When last I checked, Neil deGrasse Tyson tweeted a few days after it was on TV that it would be available at Fox's website. And because it was on Fox's website, guess what? It showed up on Xfinity as well. I'd probably prefer if it was on one of the other locations. But here's my thought, man. Let's say it wasn't. Or any other show I watch. Like some of the HBO shows are very stingy. They're basically only available through HBO Go online and through places like Xfinity that just channel things like that for an extended length of time. Well, big whoop. So I won't watch your show. Or I won't watch your show for another year until you make it available on the other outlets. Whatever. And no big loss. I realized that, oh my, the hot new show is, let's say, True Detective, which I have not watched a single episode of yet, but lots of people were talking about, so I want to. I'm not going to shed a tear if I don't see it this week. Or if I have to wait 6 months to see it, I'll wait 6 months to see it. And guess what? If by 6 months later I've forgotten about it and no longer care, I'm not going to watch it at all. And I'm not going to particularly miss it. I'm not going to go out of my way. So that's not going to stop me from cutting the cord. Right now, I think I'm basically without the cord. Like I said, a few little things left, but I'm slowly migrating off. Within 3 to 6 months, I'm not going to, on a regular basis, watch anything off my TV. I think my wife is almost there. Alex is almost there. I mean, we record some shows on the TiVo for him, but most of the time he watches on those other sources anyway. I think Amy, our daughter's last holdover, every time we mention cutting out cable, she's like, no, but I watch stuff. But, if it gets to the point where she's the only one using it, well, then she can pay for it if she wants it. I don't see any need for it's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of time till we cut the cord on cable television per se. And we don't get our internet through Comcast right now. We have Fios through Frontier, which bought it from Verizon in our area. So we could ditch Comcast completely, I think, and not really miss it very soon. And I think this is the direction that, of course, the cable companies are completely afraid of. They don't want things to move this way. They like the way they've got it set up with channel packages and this and that and this and, but we pay way, way, way too much for cable. For all kinds of channels we never watch, and more of our watching is going away from even the channels that we do get through them. So screw it. Time to cut the cord. Well, not quite yet, but soon. And I'm actively migrating my stuff away to get to that point sooner rather than later. And I think lots of people are doing so, and as was mentioned on the Cosmos thing, and even in Neil deGrasse Tyson's tweet about it, he's like, for those of you who haven't watched an actual television in years, here you go, here's your online. And that's the thing. I bet you most young kids coming up through high school and college now, once they become independent, aren't necessarily going to be thinking that the first thing they set up in their new apartment is cable. At least not channel packages. They're going to want internet. That's the first thing they're going to want set up. They're going to want their pipe to the internet. But they're not specifically going to care about getting their channel packages, because they're going to get their entertainment through that internet connection. That's the primary mode. And it's going to be more and more and more so. And I think that's just inevitable. And the
the major cable companies and satellite providers and everything else are going to fight it with everything they've got. But in the end, they're big, fat, dumb pipes, and that's what they're destined to be. And if they, and again, we had this show a couple weeks ago about the merger and monopolies and stuff. The one thing that's keeping them in place is the local monopolies that are granted. Because the thing that really needs to be there to dethrone them is competitors easily coming in and offering internet-only packages at reasonable prices. And that's really difficult right now, given the last mile problem and they have local monopolies on this. But we'll see. I think it's only a matter of time.
Beep, beep, beep. Brief edit to cover the time I walked away from the microphone and you couldn't hear anything I said. Beep, beep, beep.
And I'm just going to wrap it up. I'm just going to wrap it up and then we'll drive home. Anyway. Oh, wrap up the show. I'm going to finish talking. That's what it means. I'm not actually going to wrap up something in wrapping paper. Okay. Anyway, Alex says it's time to go, and I think it probably is. We're well over an hour now, and I need to wrap this show and get it out. And guess what? My battery's low again. It's back down to 8%. I better hurry up and save so I don't have the same thing happen to me again that happened before. And it's after my usual zero UTC deadline on Friday. It's actually Saturday UTC now, which is unpleasant for me. Just after zero. It's 0:14 UTC as I'm closing this up. I'll get the show out in a little bit once I get home and plugged in. Anyway, thanks everybody for joining us once again. Next week, hopefully we'll have Yvonne back in a normal show. In the meantime, everybody have a good week. Goodbye.
Just for the record, this is Sam from the future again. When I stopped that and hit save, it finished saving with literally seconds to spare before the battery died again. So I once again came this close to losing the whole thing because I didn't hit save in time and my battery ran out. Of course, given what the audio quality ended up like, maybe it would have been better if it had disappeared and I'd re-recorded it. Oh well, that's the show. See you guys next week.